Let's read together Deuteronomy chapter 24. Some of the laws of the Mosaic covenant reviewed in this chapter regulated existing wrong practices, and some of the laws reviewed in this chapter anticipated potential wrong practices. Let's begin by reading the first four verses of the chapter. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness or indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, when she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her as his wife, then her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. Let's begin our study of Deuteronomy chapter 24 with some background notes. It is very important to note in the first four verses that we just read concerning marriage and divorce that the law dealing with this situation is not in verse 1, but in verse 4. The King James Version is a little misleading here in the translation of verse 1 because it sounds like the law was for a man to get a divorce if his wife found no favor in his eyes. I'm reading Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1 from the King James Version. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand, and send her out of his house. The phrase, then let him write her a bill of divorcement, should really be translated when he writes her a bill of divorcement, or if he writes her a bill of divorcement. In other words, it was a condition of divorce that this law was dealing with, not a law to get a divorce. The law actually comes in verse 4, where under the conditions described in verses 1 through 3, the first husband was not allowed to remarry the first wife if she had been remarried to another man after the first divorce. So it was not a law commanding divorce, but rather a law regulating divorce and remarriage. And that brings us then to our first doctrinal point for Deuteronomy chapter 24. So doctrinal point number one, some of Israel's laws regulated existing practices. Some of Israel's laws regulated existing practices. The law here in Deuteronomy chapter 24 was not commanding divorce in a bad marriage, but rather was regulating the existing practice of divorce that was going on in Israel. This explains the Lord's answer to the Pharisees' question in Matthew chapter 19. They said to him, "Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" He said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so." Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 8. The children of Israel probably picked up the practice of divorce in Egypt. Now this law in Deuteronomy chapter 24 is regulating that wrong practice, not approving it. This law in Deuteronomy chapter 24 is really protection for the women in that society. It's assumed that the phrase in verse 1 of not finding favor in the husband's eyes because of some indecency was not referring to adultery or fornication because that was punishable by death. Down through the years, the Jewish people argued as to what constituted the indecency. How serious did it have to be grounds for divorce? In any case, if the husband did divorce his wife wrongfully, and she did remarry, and that marriage ended in divorce, then the law was that the first husband could not remarry the woman. Now, I think you can see how this law prevented legalized affairs and wife swapping, and really protected the woman from being abused as a sex object. Without the regulations of this law, things would have gone from bad to worse. some of Israel's laws regulated existing practices. Doctrinal point number two, some of Israel's laws anticipated potential problems. Some of Israel's laws anticipated potential problems. Verses 5 through 22. In these verses, we have a number of laws concerning social life in Israel. God, knowing what the fallen nature of man was like, had these laws incorporated as part of the Mosaic Covenant in order to protect his people from potential problems and sinful practices. In verse 5, we have the law concerning a new marriage. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken. Now, we've already seen in Deuteronomy chapter 20 that a man could get out of going to war if he was recently married. Now, here in Deuteronomy chapter 24 is a law stating that he must spend a year at home after marriage, even if he was willing to go to war. The Lord foresaw all the potential problems that could develop if marriage and family life did not get off to a good start. This law, of course, has good application for today. Newly married couples especially should spend quality time together getting to know one another before the babies arrive. In verse 6, we have a law concerning pledges. No man shall take the lower or the upper millstone in pledge, for he takes one's living in pledge. As collateral for a debt, you could not take the handheld millstones that were used to grind grain for daily bread. Would anyone ever do that? Yes, in view of man's sinful nature. But God ordained this law to prevent that potential problem. In verse 7, we have the law against kidnapping. If a man is found kidnapping any of his brethren of the children of Israel and mistreats him or sells him, then that kidnapper shall die, and you shall put away the evil from among you. I think we can all appreciate the reason for the death penalty for kidnapping. In verses 8 and 9, we have a law concerning leprosy and skin diseases. Take heed in an outbreak of leprosy that you carefully observe and do according to all that the priests, the Levites, shall teach you. Just as I commanded them, so you shall be careful to do. Remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam on the way when you came out of Egypt. Because Miriam is given as an example here, it seems to suggest that God might use leprosy as discipline in the life of the community or the life of an individual, as in the case of King Uzziah, for example. In any case, if and when this potential situation took place, the regulations of Leviticus chapters 13 and 14 were to be strictly applied. In verses 10 through 13, we have another law concerning pledges. When you lend your brother anything, you shall not go into his house to get his pledge. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you lend shall bring the pledge out to you. And if the man is poor, you shall not keep his pledge overnight. You shall in any case return the pledge to him again when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his own garment and bless you. And it shall be righteousness to you before the Lord your God. The bottom line here was the dignity of the debtor, especially if he was poor. His home was his castle and was not to be entered into in demand of some immediate payment. And the poor debtor was not to be humiliated by his pledged items necessary for living kept overnight. In verses 14 and 15, we have a law requiring that wages not be withheld from the poor and needy. Verses 14 and 15. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who is in your land within your gates. Each day you shall give him his wages and not let the sun go down on it, for he is poor and has his heart set on it, lest he cry out against you to the Lord and it be sin to you. So wages were not to be withheld from the poor and needy. In fact, the poor and needy should be paid daily because they need the money to provide basic needs for themselves and their families. Let me ask you, how many of you have been in that situation before? You've done the work and you need to be paid because you don't have savings to meet your present needs. Well, we can understand the importance of this law because human nature tends not to pay on time if it's not required. Would you agree? Notice, by the way, that the worker was not to be paid ahead of time, but after the work was done. And there's a lot of good practical application there as well. In verse 16, we have a law concerning individual guilt. Verse 16, fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall children be put to death for their fathers. A person shall be put to death for his own sin. Even though parental input and bringing up children has a lot to do with how the children turn out, parents were not to be put to death for a sin of their offspring which demanded capital punishment. And children were not to be put to death for a sin of a parent which required the death penalty. In the surrounding foreign nations to Israel, sometimes whole families were put to death. In cases like Achan and his family, who were put to death in Joshua chapter 7, it is assumed that the whole family was guilty. In verses 17 through 22, we have the law protecting and providing for the widow, the orphan, and the alien. You shall not pervert justice, do the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. Notice how these gleaning laws were different from the welfare programs in our own country. There were no free handouts in Israel. Gleaning did take work, sometimes all day. In all of these laws, we see the wisdom of God guarding against problems that could result if safeguards were not included in the Mosaic Covenant. Some of Israel's laws anticipated potential problems. Now, what about practical application from Deuteronomy chapter 24? Learn to say, keep the change more often. Learn to say, keep the change more often. We see from these laws in Deuteronomy chapter 24, dealing with social life in Israel, that God was very concerned about protecting and providing for the poor and needy and orphans and widows and aliens. But at the same time, there was no free lunch. People were expected to work and do what they could to make ends meet. Now, how do we apply these same principles in dealing with the poor and needy today, in your church, in your fellowship group, or even in your neighborhood? You learn to say, keep the change more often. In other words, don't create a welfare system where people get something for nothing, but try to provide work and pay well and learn to say, keep the change more often.